The gospel reading for this Christmas day is that passage from John 1 about the Word becoming flesh and light shining in the darkness. It's a wonderful passage for Christmas. It carries the idea of the incarnation and the image of light that keeps on shining, even in this, the darkest season of the year. I love that passage, and I love to preach it, but this year I have gotten stuck on a little piece of verse left over from Christmas Eve and the Gospel of Luke, chapter 2. It's the one where Luke tells us that Mary wrapped her child in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room in the inn. As I said, it's just a piece of a verse, probably less than a third of the whole thing, but I can't seem to stop thinking about it. And when I do, I realize how little those words actually tell us, and yet how much they suggest. There was no room in the inn. I don't think I've ever seen a children's Christmas pageant where there wasn't an innkeeper. You know the scene, Joseph knocks on the door opens, there stands a young man dressed in his father's bathrobe, the innkeeper. Joseph asks, "Do you have any room?" And he says, "I'm sorry, there is no room in the inn." I don't know how old I was before I figured out that the innkeeper is never mentioned in the Gospel of Luke and does not have a speaking part. We've just filled in the blank left by the text. In fact, we filled in a lot of blanks. The gospel doesn't mention a stable. It doesn't say anything about the friendly beasts. There is no little drummer boy. But the tradition of the innkeeper seems logical enough, doesn't it? I don't think they had those neon signs in those days that said no vacancy. There must have been some moment when Joseph and Mary inquired about accommodations at the inn. There must have been some person who told them, "Sorry, we're full." But how would you like to be that person? Especially when you found out who it was that you had turned away on Christmas Eve. You could write a whole Christmas pageant about that, couldn't you? It would start with a man sitting on a sidewalk holding out a tin cup, begging for loose change from passersby. When he finally got around to telling his story, he would tell the audience that he was the innkeeper from the Christmas narrative. The one who told Joseph there wasn't any room in the inn. Only when he found out from the shepherds later what had happened and who it was he had turned away did he realize what a terrible mistake he had made. Ever since then, he had tried to live it down. But he couldn't. He was haunted by that moment, plagued by his guilt. When he tried to go to sleep at night, all he could hear was the sound of slamming doors. He would toss and turn, but every time he tossed, slam. Every time he turned, slam. Eventually, he became so exhausted from the lack of sleep that he couldn't hold on to his business any longer, and that's how he ended up on the streets, begging for money. The cardboard sign beside him, lettered by hand, said, "I shut the door on Jesus. Please help." We are here today to celebrate Christmas, to rejoice in the good news that even though he wasn't born in the inn, Jesus was born. But we are also here to celebrate 50 years of worshiping Jesus in this beautiful building. And if you will allow me to stretch it just a little bit, I think there is a connection. I think the fact that there are so many churches in the world and so many beautiful churches suggests the possibility that the world has been dealing with a kind of collective guilt ever since that night in Bethlehem. We don't want to let it be said ever again that there was no room for Jesus. And so we have made some big, beautiful rooms. We have made this one, and like so many other churches, we have overdone it. We have made it bigger than it really had to be. We have made it more beautiful. It's as if we had taken the place of that ancient innkeeper. It's our way of making up to Jesus for the dark, cramped stable in which he had to be born. Here, we say, turning the key, opening the door, here is a suitable room for you. I find some of that kind of thinking in Dr. Edward Pruden's memories of building this sanctuary. At one point he recalled, we had to decide what type of building would be constructed. Would it be as economical a building as we could erect, or would it be a building that would be lasting, beautiful, and testifying to our faith? We finally decided that it would be the latter kind of structure. Congregation chose one of the outstanding church architects in America, Mr. Harold Wagoner, and the same construction company that had built the Washington National Cathedral to do the job. None of this came cheap, of course, and the bulk of Dr. Pruden's memories of building the church center around purchasing the necessary property and securing the building loans that would make it possible to get started. It didn't help that none of the trustees were in favor of construction. And a member of the building committee sabotaged two loan agreements because he didn't like the plans that had been drawn up. But eventually, and largely due to Dr. Pruden's determination, construction went forward. He writes, knowing that the old building would have to be demolished, we had to find a place of worship for the 2 years the new building would be under construction. We were very fortunate in securing the auditorium of the Jewish Community Center at 16th and Q Streets, just two blocks away. And during that period, I was sometimes referred to as Rabbi Pruden. Our Sunday school classes met in several buildings over a four-block area, and we referred to this section of 16th Street as our Baptist campus. On Sunday mornings, the neighborhood presented a busy scene as people from different buildings came to the Jewish Community Center for worship. I've seen the pictures of the chancel choir of the First Baptist Church marching together in procession up toward the Jewish Community Center, looking like Baptist monks dressed in their cassocks with sheepish grins on their faces. But as Christmas Day 1955 approached, there was a flurry of activity to get everything finished before the congregation entered the sanctuary for the first time. The pews had been made in Philadelphia by a Czechoslovakian craftsman who thought so highly of his work that he would only let his own carpenters install them. This caused problems with the local carpenters who threatened to walk out on the job. The pews, these pews in which you are sitting, went back and forth to Philadelphia three times before the labor dispute was resolved. And the installation itself wasn't finished until late on Christmas Eve. Dr. Pruden was here that night along with some others. I've heard that his own children were here helping to sweep up the dust and debris to get the place ready for the next day's worship service. The red curtain here in front of the baptistry was hung at 2:30 on Christmas morning by a Jewish curtain maker who didn't want to disappoint the church. You can imagine then, Dr. Pruden concludes, with what emotions we entered the building that Christmas morning to worship God. The smell of freshly cut wood, freshly carved stone, and evergreen boughs was in the air. As people came into this room, Sarah Mae McIntyre tells the story perfectly, I think. She describes walking down this center aisle into this place, looking around, marveling at the magnificence of it. She says, "When I got to the cross aisle right there, I burst into tears. It was just so beautiful. It had been such an enormous project, so costly in every sense of the word, filled with so much sacrifice that the whole congregation gasped with joy and relief just to see it completed." Dr. Pruden concludes his reflections with the dedicatory prayer of Solomon for the temple in Jerusalem. "But will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold the heaven, and heaven of heavens cannot contain thee. How much less this house that I have builded? Yet have thou respect unto the prayer of thy servant and to his supplication, O Lord my God, to hearken unto the cry and to the prayer which thy servant prayeth before thee today. That thine eyes may be open toward this house night and day, even toward the place of which thou hast said, My name shall be there. That thou mayest hearken unto the prayer which thy servant shall make toward this place." It was a huge job to build this building. It took a long time. It cost a lot of money. Those who were in favor of it faced sturdy opposition from those who were not. Some people left the church because of it. But it went forward largely, I believe, because those who were for it believed they were making room for Jesus in the city of Washington, D.C. And I don't know that that has ever been more important than it is today. At a time in history when every piece of Washington property is being snapped up for profitable commercial use, when it seems that the city as well as the nation is becoming increasingly secular day by day, when we could have sold this sanctuary 100 times over to be torn down or turned into condominiums, we have consecrated it and kept it for the worship of Jesus Christ. We wouldn't want him to visit our town now and find that as in Bethlehem then there was no room for him. We have made room here. And we want this place always to be his place. And if you would let me preach just a little bit, even on Christmas Day, let me remind you that if it is his place, we have to make room not only for him, but also for those unsavory friends of his. Remember what the scribes and Pharisees said about him? This man welcomes sinners and tax collectors. I'm sure that if we let him in here this morning, if we set up a throne here in the chancel and dressed him up in a red robe with ermine trim, if we put a crown on his head and a scepter in his hand, if we started coming down the aisle with gifts in our hands, singing joy to the world, the Lord is come, let earth receive her king, it wouldn't be long before we noticed that the same kind of people who used to gather around him in the old days were gathering around him again. Sinners, tax collectors, prostitutes, lepers, all pushing and shoving to get a little closer, to touch the hem of his garment. We might start feeling a little uncomfortable at that point. Might start clearing our throats and wondering how all these people got in here, into this beautiful building we have built, until we noticed that innkeeper hanging back from the crowd just a little bit, looking embarrassed, feeling ashamed. He would just stand there somewhere near the back of the room until Jesus spotted him. Until Jesus jumped up from his throne, threw off his robe, pushed everyone else out of the way, ran down the aisle, threw his arms around that man and welcomed him like a long-lost son. And then we would all gasp with joy and relief because we are so much like that innkeeper. In our heart of hearts, we know how many times we have shut the door on Jesus. We know how many times in our busy lives we have failed to make room for him. To see him leap up off his throne like that, to embrace the innkeeper, would be the best Christmas pageant ever, and the best Christmas present we could receive, because we would know that if he could welcome him, he could welcome us. This is why sinners like us have built big, beautiful churches for Jesus through the centuries. This is why we have made this room in this city, and why we have made it so big and so beautiful. I'm sure there were people then who said, "Why spend all that money on the church? Why not make it a little more practical, a little more economical? Surely we can use the money for other things." It seems extravagant. But extravagance is the order of the day. It is certainly the order of this day. We always tend to spend too much on those we love at Christmas time. There was something in the heart of this congregation 50 years ago that wanted to do this, that wanted to give this to Jesus, to make some room for him in the city of Washington and in their busy lives and in their own hearts, if only because they knew he had so many times in his own heart made room for them, for us, for you, for me. Happy, holy Christmas to you. Amen. We sing the good news of this day, "Joy to the world, the Lord is come." I invite you to stand and sing it at the top of your lungs. Let the world know, let Christ himself hear, how glad we are to celebrate his birth. Will you stand as we sing hymn 40?